Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
I'm joined now by Conor McKeown from The Herald, and Shane Keegan is back. And we have here in Off the Ball, we have a screen of the three of us, which any of you watching at home will be able to see. But the guys are actually, well, Shane in particular, is absolutely glued to the screen, which you won't see, which is actually under.
How could you not be, Johnny?
Yeah, so what's going on, Shane?
We're watching our Irish man. I had to get clarification as to how Lennon is actually in the darts, because I knew he couldn't possibly have qualified as one of the eight strongest, but it appears that Gary Anderson is out injured, so they're parachuting a different person in to replace him for each leg.
And he's doing well.
And obviously, because it's in Dublin and because it's in the Tree Arena, it's an Irish man. I did a piece last week in the Times, Johnny, on Carlo people. I think I sent it on to you.
Got the plug in there already.
Lennon is another Carlo man. Yet another Carlo.
Carlo's rising on so many fronts. Pádraig Gammon, hurler's doing well.
Footballer's going well.
You know.
And we're 3-2 up against Peter Snake Bite Rice here at the moment in a first two best of 12 legs. So he's going with a serious chance of getting a serious win on the board here tonight.
He's dressed, he looks very normal for a darts player. He's kind of, Snakebite makes him look kind of just like one of the lads in that little queue that I was talking about earlier. No.
Strange look, all right. Lennon, as the boys said outside when I was getting a cup of tea, he knows his audience anyway. He came out to Whiskey in the Jar as his entrance music.
Ah, well, that's not
very
too bad.
Very enjoyable.
And the beauty of having live broadcasts on video is that we can show stuff like this, which is Conor's excellent piece today, Best of Enemies, and this is about Dublin and Mayo, and we have a beautiful photo of that free kick, which I think was one of the most controversial sporting incidents in many years, actually, or certainly in Gaelic games. But I'd be friendly enough with John Small, who's suspended for this game. Mm. He's absolutely gutted to be missing this game over nearly any other game in the league, I would got the impression. Why is that, Conor?
Well, I mean, there is a genuine rivalry, like, you know, and I've spoken to people from both sides of the thing, and I think people like to romanticise it a bit and think that it's a clash of cultures, but it's not. Like, you know, it's two teams that have contested very weighty matches. You know, so like I don't think it's any different from Kerry Tyrone in the last decade. We probably didn't have one in the 90s because in the 90s in football,
so fragmented,
and Sam Maguire changed hands so frequently. But like, if you go back through it, like, they have played some of the most. Like, I spoke to Enda Varley yesterday, the former Mayo forward who's playing for St Vincent at the moment. I said, look, when do you think this turn sour? And he started talking. He said, well, the 15, and the more you go through it, there's always been a bit of a flashpoint between these teams, and you know, it's inevitable. Like, you know, I think I'd be very surprised if there were too many of the opposition team were on either team's Christmas card list.
Did Lee Keegan go down in your estimation, in both your estimations, for that incident?
Well, it's a funny thing, right? There has been a huge amount of comment on the kind of non-sportsmanlike conduct that goes on in these
sledging
games.
Sledging and so on.
Sledging and gamesmanship and all these things. But I spoke to an awful lot of inter-county players since then who actually thought it was one of the most innovative things that they've ever heard.
Definitely innovative.
Yeah. But like, that's a reflective of the culture, I think, in Gaelic football. Because can you imagine Johnny Sexton's shaping up to take a kick in a rugby game.
That's the gentleman's game.
Yeah, and somebody throws a GPS pack at him. Like, the person would be, you know, publicly shamed and roundly booed, you know. So
that's very, very interesting. But it was almost like lauded in some circles.
It was a bit, you know. And there's a quote in the piece from Lee Keegan saying, look, I'd love to know what other people would have come up with, because I was facing losing the fourth All-Ireland final. And when you put it like that, you can nearly justify
it. Excuse.
But I think little enough or less of it was made because Dean Rock got the kick. Whereas had he missed it, it would have been a national scandal.
Johnny, like, you're clearly wearing your Galway tinted glasses here. Like, your tone of voice is completely is absolutely to do with Galway.
What are you talking about?
There is apps. If you're in the same position, which is highly unlikely.
No, Shane. I'm consistent on things like this. If a Galway player did that to win us All Ireland, it'd be. If Galway hurlers won the All-Ireland last year, genuinely, I felt when Joe went for that free at the end, I was like, we don't really deserve this. I would have thought it was a slightly kind of qualified victory and that sort of stuff. When I played as an underage or whatever, I would have thought I was a clean player. I never got into nonsense like that, and I have no real time for it.
But we seem to have less of an issue with somebody inflicting physical violence on somebody else intentionally in a game than we have with an incident like that, would you?
No, that's less harmful than that. Yeah, a very dangerous tackle is worse again.
Yeah.
With intent.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think.
Are you
think
advocating the dark arts then? As you, because you were a manager of Galway United, manager of Wexford Youths. You played at a. This is proper professional football in Ireland. Do you want to get a 1% edge?
Yeah. So, well, obviously, in my scenario, it was a professional environment, and you're. I heard you had a chat earlier about. Thomas Byrne, let's take for example, and would you try and wind a player up who's known for being aggressive? Absolutely, you'd give those.
I've sympathy for Thomas. So Thomas Byrne has signed for Drogheda United. He's known to be a colourful character on the pitch, and unfortunately, opposition managers know that, and they will try to wind him up. That is probably.
But my point is here. I can completely understand his mindset. Like these guys are putting their absolute lives on hold to try and achieve the ultimate. And when you're looking at a scenario that it's about to all disappear in front of you, I think logic goes out the window to a certain extent, or certainly people's opinions of you go out the window to a certain extent.
I'd say you kind of you resort to desperation quite quickly.
Absolutely. I can completely understand that. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not arguing that it's right, but I can definitely understand why he...
See, against that, I'd condone Suarez for what he did at the World Cup because, like...
Biting or handball?
Not the biting, sorry, the handball. the biting's just like...
On, Johnny.
It's professional foul, but he's, you know, at the same time, it's kind of a win-at-all-cost mentality that's kind of consistent with Uruguay. But in any event, let's talk Mayo-Dublin and the possibility of Dublin losing three of their first four games.
Well...
And being out of the league in terms of winning it.
I mean, this game is as significant as football gets at this time of year, but how significant football at this time of year is in the bigger picture, you know, that's open
a lot
to,
more than it was.
Well, it's open to interpretation. I think because we've nothing else to go on, we tend to be very weighty in the way we kind of assess what goes on now. No more so than I was in Nolan Park last Sunday, and, you know, everybody leaving were sure that Kilkenny are finished and Limerick are definitely going to win two in a row. You know what I mean? And
overreaction is common.
And we always kind of come back to these things after the All-Ireland and say, look, we won't fall into that trap again. And then here we are talking about the same thing. But just exclusively from the Dublin thing, if they don't make a league final, like you could make an argument and say that it's a positive development. They'll have an extra week, the players go back to their clubs, and everything this year is about keeping the Dublin players and the team fresh
for the Super 8s
for the back end of the championship. Alternatively, you can say that in the 6 years of Jim Gavin being Dublin manager, they have made the league final in every single year. So if you don't make the league final, at the very least, it's something out of the ordinary. It's not normal. And I think this is probably the one season when Gavin would be very keen to keep things as ordinary as possible.
Because of the looming 5-0.
Because of the fact that the noise around the team is going to get to screeching point very, very soon. And if you can kind of maintain, like there's a monotony to Dublin's win rate. Do you know what I mean? Like they show up in the league, they win games because that's what they do, they beat teams. But all of a sudden, if they stop doing that, there's kind of a bit more attention on the team. And I don't think that would be particularly welcome.
And along that very same mindset, you were saying they should be in the league final because they're always in the league final. I'd also argue that they should beat Mayo because they always beat Mayo.
Well, that's the other
big... They don't always beat them. They either beat them by a point or they draw, pretty much.
Well, if you go back through it... No,
okay, they don't lose to them.
It's 7 years since Mayo beat Dublin, which is a fair record given the close...
That's astonishing.
Well, given how close a lot of the games have been, particularly in the Championship, and given how good Mayo have been in that period of time. And, like, there's no... I know it's not an exact science, but, like... In the last 7-8 years, Dublin have had it over Kerry in the Championship. They've had it over Mayo in the Championship. And if you look at their league record against the two teams, it has been significantly better in their win-loss kind of column. So, like, there's some correlation between the two. There definitely is. And no more than Dublin would have came away from Tralee a couple of weeks ago and said, OK, look, we're just back at it. Mm. We nearly got it back. No big deal. I don't think you can ever beat your rivals often enough. And that's the bottom line going into Saturday and why it's so intriguing.
I spoke to Bernard Flynn earlier today. He makes a case that a lot of the players are either slightly worse than they were last season or no better, some defensively. Where do you see this Dublin team versus the team that obviously beat Tyrone in the All-Ireland final?
No better. Yeah, it's an interesting take. I don't think there's going to be too many springers this year for Dublin. Like last year, Brian Howard
He was a revelation.
He was a revelation, but he was a well-touted revelation. People knew he was coming. Owen Merchant was slightly different in that he played in an under-21 team, and a lot of people just presumed he would be too small to make the step up. But actually what Dublin needed was a defender who would follow the opposition's best ball carrier out the pitch. And if you look at the All-Ireland final, he must have collected 13, 14 kickouts. So he became a very... He actually gave Dublin a different dimension. But I can't see too many springers this year kind of coming into the team. So, like, are the defenders any worse? They're definitely a small bit older. So last year's All-Ireland... last year's All-Ireland final, the Dublin starting attack, I think, had an average age of 24 years. And Dean Rock was the oldest by 3 years.
That's a frightening thing.
And that was a deliberate thing from Jim Gavin over the past few years, that he knew he had to regenerate his attack with a lot of pace and youth.
The Mayo team's actually come in as well, which is quite helpful. Robbie Henley, Brendan Harrison, Jerk Hafferty, Keith Higgins, Lee Keegan, Colin Boyle, Paddy Durkin, Matthew Rann, Donald Vaughan, Fiona McDonough, Aidan O'Shea, Kieran Tracy, Andy Morn, incredible Andy Morn, still going strong, Brian Reap and Jason Doherty.
Well, I think the most interesting selection there is Robbie Henley, because David Clark has been goalkeeper too, All-Star two of the last 3 years. Robbie Henley started both FBD league games this year for Horan. He started two of the first three league games, the first two, and David Clark started the last game against Cavan. So the Mayo goalkeeping jersey is a great test case in this theory that a goalkeeper's distribution is actually more beneficial to their value than the shot stopping.
Oh, that's unquestionable.
Yeah, no. But you're in a situation now that Horan was in before, that Stephen Rochford was in, that Pat Holmes and Noel Kennelly were in for a single season. Mm. Both goalkeepers are outstanding at the things they do well, but both of them have weaknesses, and they're kind of juxtaposed that way. So it's interesting that he's gone for...
You could probably have a bang average, even poor goalkeeper at saving, who's brilliant at tactical kickouts, and you'd be happy enough.
Yeah, but the 2016...
That was the aberration, I suppose.
They picked Henley on the basis but the interesting thing about Henley...
Rochford absolutely vilified for it afterwards.
Yeah, but again, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, you know.
If Mayo win this game, I'll ask both of you, is it psychologically a help in terms of beating Dublin?
Definitely.
Showing they can do absolutely. In Crow Park particularly.
And that's the point. I don't think they will win the game. I would definitely think Dublin are going to win the game because, again, going back to the football analogies as I do, as a Tottenham fan, Tottenham used to have a terrible kind of record against the better teams, and to me it was because we were a good side, so the better teams prepared properly for us. Mayo have a terrible record, right? They don't lose mass by big scores, but they don't beat them. Like, most teams have probably bet Dublin somewhere along the line. Well, not most teams, sorry.
Quite a few of
the more prominent teams have bet Dublin somewhere along the line during the Gavin period. Mayo haven't. And Dublin well and truly have their foot on their neck, and they'll want to keep their foot on their neck. Like, if they'd rather, I would imagine they'd rather lose a league game to anybody else bar Mayo, really, myself at the moment.
Definitely. And definitely in Croke Park as well. There is a thing about James Horan coming back, there's a freshness to Mayo, but the other thing is, Mayo went out of the Championship very early last year, so Mayo were probably about 6 weeks ahead of Dublin in their preparations for the league. Now, Dublin were always going to suffer in the first three league games, but they've had a 2 week break, so you'd imagine you're going to see something closer to the real Dublin, or whatever the real Dublin in the middle of February can possibly be on Saturday night. So I don't think they will be able to, or just even, there's a lot of the Dublin players, fellas like James McCarthy, they don't want to lose anything. You can see it pains them to lose any sort of a game. So I think it would pain them more to lose on Saturday night than any of the other league games that they have this year.
Speaking of James McCarthy, what midfield do you think he'll pick?
Obviously Brian Fenton, but I don't know, the other spot is very interesting. I have a feeling that maybe Brian Howard actually might end up back there, because Dublin have a lot of forward options, and Howard is just so versatile. But McCarthy is so good. He played three roles the last day. He went in at full back, he was playing at centre back, and then he went into midfield and he kicked 3 points. And I think, you're talking about a fellow with 6 All-Ireland medals at the age of 29, that could go on and set records. And he has overlapped the two Dublin teams of this era, if you know what I mean. He was a young buck in 2011. He's one of the older players now on the team at this stage. But I think of all the Dublin players other than Cluxton, this decade, I think James McCarthy is probably the most influential.
Longer term, Who's a bigger threat to Dublin, Kerry or Mayo?
Well, long-term Kerry, but that's not to say that Mayo aren't a bigger threat this year.
Even this year, actually.
Yeah, well, it's hard to know. You get the impression from those Kerry young players that if they start to win All-Irelands, they mightn't stop, you know what I mean? But whereas the Mayo, the age profile of the Mayo team is far older. Like, there can't be too many kicks left in Keith Higgins and Andy Moran, and they've had a problem cultivating a greater degree of options. Like, the last time we were in the final in 17, really the only selection decision they came up was whether Paddy Durkin or Dermot O'Connor would start. And the players they brought off, like, Dublin, you could make the argument that Dublin finished with a better team that day, whereas Mayo definitely didn't. They brought on substitutions in kind of an old-fashioned way of replacing players who were tired. So, like, there's definitely kicking Mayo this year, but long-term it's definitely Kerry.
Who would Dublin fear more in the final this year?
I don't know. I don't think they do fear, you know.
Like, fear is definitely like, not worth. Yeah, I was just going to retract that word.
It was an interesting point. I was watching the GAA's new archive. I flicked through it the other day, but I saw a piece of footage where Colin Cooper was saying that the thing that's mad about Dublin is they ignore you. They're just relentless, and they go for the next ball. They ignore any distraction like the scoreboard, the referee, the clock, or anything like that. But I suppose the thing that Mayo have been able to do is get Dublin to pay attention to them. Like that's what always happens in those games. They get under their skin to a large extent. But the biggest problem the Mayo have had, and if you kind of want to boil it down to a very specific thing, look at all the big games, the 15 semi-final replay, the 16 final replay, the 17 final. In the last 4 or 5 minutes, when the pressure is at its highest and the game is there to be decided, Dublin's execution has been absolutely superb, and Mayo's has been probably below their own standard.
Who wins Saturday night?
Dublin.
You'd agree with that, Shane?
Yeah, I just can't see them. As I say, they're the one team that they will be so clued in for. It's hard to see them slipping up when they're fully focused.
Tuam Stadium will host Galway and Kerry, and Tuam was a slightly sort of maybe depressed town in a typical kind of country town that's been left by the cities, and a town that really needed a Pearse Stadium to be, or rather Tuam Stadium to be developed and become the football ground. But to have a game like this, and I've always thought football should never be moved out of Tuam Stadium, but anyway, to have a game like this is huge for Tuam on Sunday, and will tell us maybe a lot about where Galway are, because I get the feeling from talking to guys at home there's an awful lot of negativity towards the way Galway are playing football, not the standard of players, but towards the way that they've been basically programmed to play.
Yeah, it's hard to argue against that, but the only thing I will say, just in the context of that game, it's very obvious from Kevin Walsh that, a little bit like Mickey Hart and Tyrone, it's hard to pay too much attention to what they've done in the league until now. Like, both of those teams were in roughly similar positions. They were at the latter stages of the All-Ireland final, or the All-Ireland series last year. You know, they've won their provincial title recently enough. Galway, I think, are on the far side of the draw to Roscommon and Mayo this year in Connacht. So they won't have to play a game of any great significance until the middle of June, probably. And they have a couple of injuries. I know the Comer injury sounds like he's going to have to go back and have surgery. And they're obviously waiting for the Corryfin players to come back. But they're incredibly flat the night that they played Dublin and Croke Park.
They kind of gave up that night, didn't they?
Yeah, well, it looked like they didn't have any choice but to give up. But like, you'd imagine there's an awful lot more to come from Galway. But I think in analysing them, they're a little bit like Tyrone. I think it's a bit of a fool's errand this year. Because not that you deliberately go out to be below your own standard, but maybe your training is geared in such a way that you don't have any choice.
What have you made of Kerry, Shane?
Yeah, look, I'd say, like you were saying, it's probably a bit early in terms of them hitting full flow, but they're exciting to watch, that's for sure.
It's all about defensively, though, if they can answer that question, isn't it? Defensively, yeah, is a question.
And even though it's, you know, even though you can't get carried away with form, in the way that we're saying it would be a huge kind of confidence booster if Mayo could pull it off. Like, Kerry have to have taken some confidence from that performance, like they're against the Dubs. They really have to. And with my like limited enough football knowledge, I thought they were fantastic that night. But the league is the league, and
you say that the league's the league. Just might wrap up on that. It was just something that came into my head today. Is it not easy to envisage the league forming some part of a greater sort of championship structure? Because the league is now much more relevant than the provincial championships in many respects. Certainly Connacht and Leinster, obviously. And there's the league has There'll be like nearly a, probably a sold out crowd in Tralee. Tuam Stadium will have a very big crowd on Sunday, and you know there'll be a big crowd in Croke Park. These games pitting teams of equal ability thereabouts against each other should matter. And it's almost like the league happens and then you have this big lull of the provincial championships, particularly Leinster. Dublin were 100 to 1 on to win a Leinster final there against Westmeath. You're just like, you know, so is the league, where's this gap going to be bridged, you think, Conor, long down the line?
Well, the league is a far better competition than any of the provincial championships in football. There's no doubt about that. The only problem with the league, and this goes back to my point about Galway and Tyrone, is it happens so far away from the business end of the championship that you can't be certain that what you're seeing is any true indication of where teams are at. And the closer you could bring that to the back end of the championship, the better a competition that it would actually be. So, like, I'm very, very surprised. Congress is on this weekend and there is no motion to Congress about the idea of a tiered championship.
You're surprised by that?
Yeah, I am. Like, there's an awful lot of...
It's inevitable.
Yeah, well, it is, you know.
Should be.
You know, like...
It
like,
is at some stage.
Yeah, like, what you need in football at the moment is a more consistent programme of matches between teams of a similar standard. And when you do that, you tend to have the sort of matches that Dublin had against Kerry in Tralee. I don't agree with the assessment that, well, look, there's the two best teams in the country. Naturally, they had a good game, but nobody else is up to that standard. You have really, really good games. Like Division 2, I was at the Armagh Meath game a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, two teams that are kind of not exactly sure where they are, but it turned out to be a really, really good game. And all of Division 2 is actually a brilliant league because I think there's only about 3 points between the top team, who are Meath, and the bottom team, who are Cork. And they could make up that ground this weekend when they play each other. So, like, I don't know where the connection happens. I don't know how you make it happen. And I don't know how you get a tiered championship through without annoying the teams who are going to be relegated and maybe disenfranchising the players who don't want to commit to a thing that they never played in before. But by the same token, I think, like, if the provincial hurling championships of last year taught us anything, it's that that programme of fixtures absolutely works.
Where do you see it going, Shane?
Like, as you said, you would think that it's inevitably going to get there, but it's probably going to take a very, very long time. I mean, tradition is just so strong in terms of formats and that, and people are very, very reluctant to move away from them, and essentially common sense kind of gets left to one side really in this decision making process from what I can make out, Conor.
Yeah, it definitely does. It definitely does.
There is, I suppose, as democratic as the Gaelic Association is, there is definitely kind of a holding on to tradition, which I can completely respect at the same time because it's all we've ever known, all of us.
Yeah, well, I often think that in situations like this, and I know that Central Council, you know, are a kind of a strong body, but like, you should nearly have an executive committee because I know I've been to Congress before, and
did you enjoy it?
No, and a lot of people are sitting there, half paying attention and voting on things that they don't fully comprehend, and that's actually
that's not democracy at its best.
No, and like
sounds a bit like the Brexit vote.
But
actually,
people say it's too democratic, right? Tell me how democratic is this? Last year, the CPA had a motion to Congress, and all that it wanted to achieve was that all the votes at Congress were recorded. Therefore, everybody could be held accountable for how they voted. Because people come from counties and are mandated by their county board to vote in a certain way. But nobody knows that they do. And it was absolutely annihilated. I think it was something like 87 or 88% or something like that, to 12%. So, like, we're saying it's the most democratic organisation going, but nobody wants to actually reveal how they voted these things. Nobody wants to actually put it on the record. So, you know, and things like this, I think a strong executive, you know, a kind of a Croke Park executive of people who know their way around the association and that can lead and actually recommend things that are going to make things like this better, particularly competition structures, because football is struggling, I think, because there's such a disparity between the teams. I think that's probably the way forward.
It's mainly Dublin, though, isn't it? If you took Dublin, if Dublin came down a few notches, the football championship wouldn't be
too bad. They could lose 3 out of 4 this weekend.
Yeah, which is, if they did happen to lose 3 out of 4, does it give a little bit of hope to, you know, players that might be kind of half training thinking we're doing this for no reason?
Well, there's probably only a handful of teams that could possibly beat Dublin this year, and the two main ones are Kerry and Mayo. And there are, it doesn't matter how many times Dublin beat Kerry in a row in the championship, there is no group of Kerry footballers that will ever be assembled that will go onto the pitch with Dublin and Croke Park without fully believing that they can beat them. So this idea of belief, like, I don't know whether it's the cause of it or just the outcome of it, but we've had the greatest Dublin football team of all time playing in a Leinster Championship at a time when the level of football amongst the rest of the counties has been on the floor. So, like, that's the problem there, you know.
We had a brilliant piece for the Times a couple of weeks ago with
another plug.
Yep,
for gotten more plugs in than the Herald.
Which paper is that? Yeah.
The Times. With Sean Kavanagh, where he talked about back, you know, what January meant back when he was a player and the hard slog of it and the whole lot. And he kind of just wrapped the piece up by saying that, you know, the old kind of selling point was that you got through everything in the month of January because you dreamed of winning an All-Ireland. Yeah. And he said, now, unfortunately, you can't get through January dreaming of winning All-Ireland unless you're from Dublin.
Yeah, the only thing about that is, like, I remember the start of the 2010 season. I remember being in the press box when Kilkenny won four in a row in 2009. And I remember talking to Dermot O'Flynn of the Examiner at the time. And he was saying, well, what'll they do? Seven? Eight? And it seemed an inevitability. And I wasn't around in 1982, but I'd be pretty certain all the previews of that year's championship said, Kerry are going to win the All-Ireland. So the thing about a knockout punch is you don't see it coming. And it will come, but it's hard to see it just now.
Yeah, on that note, when Galway won the All-Ireland in 2001, the Irish Independent report the following day said they're on the verge of dominating Gaelic football for the next many years, and they didn't win a game in Croke Park until
recently enough.
Yeah.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.